This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to episode 32, I believe, of the M Squared TechCast. We are coming at you from the Podcast Detroit studios in lovely Ferndale on Hilton, just north of 8 Mile. Not too sure how much longer we're going to be here. Podcast Detroit is...
We have to be quiet about that. It hasn't been announced, so
okay.
Dave will come down and,
Boy. We're not going anywhere. No,
can't talk about that.
Forget you heard that.
It's a secret.
We'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't know Dave.
Okay.
But we do know Michelle Grinnell, who's on the line from Lansing, and she's going to be talking about the Pure Michigan advertising campaign. How are you doing today, Michelle?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Just wonderful.
As you can tell, this is totally unrehearsed.
Yes.
The way we like it.
Yeah. Actually, I'm just back from a little Pure Michigan experience myself. My wife and I had our anniversary celebration this past weekend. We stayed at a little place in Petoskey called the Terrace Inn. It's a 1911 vintage hotel with only 38 rooms. A really cool spot. So I'd recommend it highly.
Yeah, I know Petoskey.
That's good to know. I'm actually on my way up to Petoskey for a little getaway of my own, so I will have to keep that in mind.
My mother grew up in Petoskey, the old Petoskey before the Bay Harbor came in and all the rest, right?
Yeah.
So changed a lot.
Yeah, there's actually traffic jams there now, but we won't go into that.
Surprising, isn't it?
Okay.
Anyway, as we get back on track here, we're going to be talking about the $1.4 billion that, according to the Longview report, said that in 2015, that's what out-of-state visitors spent in Michigan, and they attribute it to the Pure Michigan campaign. Did I get that right, Michelle?
Yeah, the group is Longwoods International, and we do this study every year to kind of look at where the campaign is being successful and where the growth of the campaign is. I think the thing to keep in note is these are trips that folks indicated that they were influenced or had exposure to the Pure Michigan campaign. So this isn't for all travel and tourism. This is just the trips and the spending that we can say Pure Michigan had a direct impact on. And what they found for 2015 was there were 4.6 million trips made to the state as a result of exposure to the Pure Michigan campaign, and that those folks spent nearly $1.4 billion in our communities and our local businesses. So, when we talk about Pure Michigan, and obviously we're talking about inspiration and getting people to travel, but at the end of the day, the reason for all of that is that $1.4 billion that they're spending in our communities. The other great thing is that also generates tax revenue for the state, and Longwoods only looks at out-of-state visitors coming into Michigan. So all of those folks were people from outside of Michigan, and they generated about $98 million in tax revenue for the state compared to the $12.7 million that we spent on out-of-state advertising. So that gives us a return on investment of about $7.67 last year. And I think that just is kind of a good indication of how this campaign has grown and how it's successful for our communities and for the state as a whole.
Well, far be it from Mike and myself to suggest that advertising doesn't work, since we both work in that
world.
We know
it works incredibly well.
So tell me where you concentrate the Pure Michigan advertising campaign out of state. I mean, I've seen a few ads in state, but where do you concentrate out of state, and what kind of messages do you send?
Well, so right now we have our national advertising campaign running. That's been running since March, and it will run through the beginning of June. And, Michigan is great because we've got all of the seasons, and we love winter and we love fall, but summer is still bread and butter of the state's tourism industry. So for our national campaign, we're really focusing on that warm weather travel season. And we've got a bunch of ads running. They're on cable channels. They'll run more than 5,000 spots between March through June. We were really excited because this year we had four new spots premiering as part of that. One that kind of focuses on the craft beer movement, one that's that farm to table, one's a road trip. And then we also just launched a few weeks ago our new Detroit comeback story campaign. So we have an ad titled The Story of Detroit running as part of the national campaign. Once we get into May, we'll start focusing on kind of that Great Lakes region, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, those folks that are in the drive markets, because Michigan is still a drive market destination by and large.
Particularly for folks from Chicago. I know when I go to South Haven or Grand Haven, it's lousy with folks from Chicago, right? So
it is. It's funny. My husband's from the St. Joseph area down in Berrien County, and we went to dinner once in New Buffalo, and there was literally like no Michigan plates in the parking lot. It was all Indiana and Illinois, which we love. Chicago is one of our biggest, if not our biggest, outstate market. Another one that we've really been focusing on in the last few years is the Toronto market over on the east side of the state, because that's really only a couple of hours drive, and they've got very similar demographics to the Chicago market. So we've been focusing a lot more attention on that Toronto market and getting them to head over into Michigan.
Yeah, I noticed a couple of the ad campaigns you mentioned, the brew pub movement, the whole farm to table thing. That's really become a big part of tourism, right?
It is. And, you know, this is the 10-year anniversary of Pure Michigan. It launched 10 years ago, if you can believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we're always looking at is where does the campaign evolve? You have to like stay true to what you are, but you also have to evolve. And one of the ways that we're evolving the campaign is looking at kind of interest-based or passion-based market. What are things that people love to do when they're on vacation? So in addition to talking about the great destinations we have, the great events here, what we're starting to do is talk about things that you can do in Michigan that you will have a unique experience or that Michigan can really own. And we think craft beer is one of those things. We think that farm to table is one of those things. Golf is one of those things. We have a passion for summer we're calling the lake effect, that effect you have with a day at the lake in Michigan. And then where can we really kind of intercept people in the things that they already love to do and help them see how they can do those with a vacation here in Michigan?
Yeah, I'm originally from the Grand Rapids area, and I'm just amazed. The last 4 or 5 years has turned into the craft beer mecca over there.
It has. And, you know, the great thing with the craft beer industry, and I would say the tourism industry as a whole in Michigan, that I don't know is the case in every other place, is just how much collaboration there really is. We just had the governor's conference on tourism here in Lansing this year, last week, and it's incredible how many people attend that. There was more than 800 people from the industry in Michigan in 2 days, and everyone wants to work together. Everyone understands that benefiting the state as a whole benefits everyone in it. That's why the Detroit comeback message is so strong, because for so many people outside of the Great Lakes region, Detroit is their entry point into Michigan, and a strong Detroit is good for everyone in Michigan. So I think that we are very fortunate to be able to work with an industry that believes in what they do, that works together, and that sees the big picture and is willing to kind of all come together on these efforts.
Well, and you have a city like Detroit that's been so beaten down in the national press, and then you have this area of downtown and midtown where, I forget what the Brookings Institution said, it was either 14,000 new jobs and 16,000 new people, or the other way around, I forget which one it was, in the last, you know, just since 2010 in the downtown midtown area. So that's an area that's booming. I mean, you go down there now and it's all new restaurants, new bars, new pubs, fun stuff to do.
Well, and then the Red Wing thing is coming in. My God, that's going to transform three city blocks.
Yep. Yeah, and that's going to create another area, another pocket of cool that, you know, the pockets of cool keep growing and expanding, and hopefully they'll merge together, right? You know, that's what's going on there.
And we have Tom Kelly in studio with us today, the COO, the new COO of Automation Alley. Are you guys working with Pure Michigan? Have you done something with them yet?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah.
Well, tell us all about it, Tom.
MEDC and Automation Alley are great partners to tell the story of what's happening around the state of Michigan and in Detroit. So, you know, when you talk about our programs like 7Cs for advanced manufacturing entrepreneurs, running trade missions, we're going to talk, I think, in the next half hour about our mission to Hanover Mesa. President was just
Thank you.
There.
I was wondering how to pronounce that.
I'm not sure I got it right, but
I was thinking hangover, but that's the brew pub.
Yeah, hangover mess. I don't know. So drink that exactly German right. beer, right? Yeah.
Hi, Michelle.
So anyway, yes, and also I was looking at from the Smith Travel Research, your hotel occupancy is like off the charts, right?
It is, you know, and that's a great indicator because sometimes our data can kind of lag a little bit, but we get monthly hotel occupancy, and that has been up year over year, and month over month, pretty much consistently since 2008, 2009. And obviously for the industry, that's important. It's heads and beds, and the fact that not only is occupancy up, but the average daily rate is up. Revenue per available room is up. So all of the numbers are up, and it just kind of is a great way for us to have an indication when things are going strongly when we're waiting for those kind of annual numbers from the previous year to come in.
Okay, and can you tell me where we are on the new tourism website? I know we talked about that last time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we're working really hard to get that turned around in a very short time frame for as big of a website as it's going to be. So we're looking at the end of this year, early next year, being able to launch that where we've kind of had some deep dive sessions. And again, this idea of the passion and interest-based marketing that I talked about is really kind of helping it to drive that new website and change how we're presenting information to folks. At the conference, one of the big things that we kept hearing about, too, is the importance of mobile and how many people are using mobile devices for travel planning and how you have to make that experience a priority. So that's something we're looking at as well, and video and all of the things that we need to really update and refresh and make sure our website is as reflective of all of the things that we're doing as the rest of the campaign.
Hey, is there somewhere on a website somewhere at the state of Michigan where we can see what you're currently showing in other markets, some of these campaigns? Do you have links there?
Absolutely. We have all of our ads up on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/PureMichigan, we've got our ads up there. We've got all sorts of other great videos that our videographer has put together up there. You can see the new 30-second and 60-second Detroit spots. You could sit there for a really long time and watch some really great Pure Michigan spots.
I'll be sure to do that tonight if I can talk here. Right?
Okay. So. And Michelle, since you're headed for Petoskey, I have a couple of recommendations for you. Tap 30 Perfect. Is a terrific brew pub. Tap 30, 30 different kinds of artisan beer on tap and incredible food. The house macaroni and cheese is to die for, and they do something that'll give you a carb coma, but you'll die happy, called tachos, which is tater tots covered with pepperoni, cheese, scallions. It's just delicious.
I hear my heart closing down.
Yes. In a more fine dining vein, we went to a place called Palette Bistro and also Vernalis Steakhouse, both really good.
So. Oh, we're gonna have to end on that very appetizing note, unfortunately. Michelle, we'll have to get you back here later this summer. You can give us an update on how things are going, but we got to move on to our next segment. This is Mike Brennan.
And this is Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We'll be right back. Hello, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're back with the M Squared TechCast, segment two.
Yes, and we have with us Keith Schoenberger, who we've had on before. He's from Young Basil. He does his intellectual property law update. It's really important out there for all you technologists to know that, because if you lose that, and you're in pretty tough shape, right, Keith?
That's absolutely right. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for having me back on.
No problem. So what are the different types of intellectual property that are protectable in the United States?
Well, we really have four main types of intellectual property that are protectable here in the U.S. Patents, trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. And I really wanted to talk about these today because it's crucial that people understand the foundational knowledge that distinguishes these types of intellectual property. Because depending on how your company operates and what business you conduct, you may really need to be aware of some of the finer points that distinguish these.
Okay. Sorry, tell me a little bit about the differences between, say, you know, trademark and copyright. I think most people understand what a patent is, but let's talk about the differences between trademark and copyright. Because you see TM after things, you see the C in the circle after
everywhere,
things.
Everywhere, overused completely, right?
Yeah, so what's the difference?
That's a great question. So to focus on trademarks first, really, we have two different monikers that you see frequently. One is the TM, which means trademark, and the other is an R with a circle around it, which really means registered trademark. That means that an application has been approved by the USPTO, and the mark has actually been registered with that agency. A trademark is a logo or symbol that can be used to distinguish the goods or services of one company against those of another. So, for example, I'm drinking a Sprite. I know that Sprite is a Coca-Cola product and not a PepsiCo product. Separately, a copyright is distinguished by the C with a circle around it, as you mentioned. And that is an instrument for protecting some kind of original work of art. And what that means, it's a fairly broad term. A copyright can protect anything from a literary work such as a book, to a musical arrangement, a recording, a painting, a sculpture, a computer program, a database, and many other things in between.
So what's a trade secret?
Well, trade secret, you understand that a patent is a public disclosure of some kind of technology. That's the reward that an inventor receives for teaching the public how to make and use their invention is a patent. But on the opposite side, the trade secret is actually something that has to be kept in strict confidentiality in order to be protected. A good example of a trade secret is the recipe for Coca-Cola, for example, not to focus solely on soda.
But you must be drinking one right now, right? So.
Well, actually, just some coffee. But it comes to mind in any event. I think that's a popular trade secret is the recipe for Coca-Cola. It's a formula that only a couple people are aware of, supposedly, and the company really has to protect that recipe as secret in order to maintain its protection.
Or Bush's baked beans. We see that dog all the time trying to sell that darn trade secret, right? So
we have to get him to stop doing that.
That's it. Yeah, dang dog. So,
if it's a corporate logo or even, say, a college athletic department logo, that would be more of a trademark than a copyright. You probably wouldn't see the C in the circle next to the logo, right?
That is correct, yes. There can be some overlap. So, for example, I'll say, I'm a very proud Spartan. So the Michigan State Spartan helmet logo is protectable, generally under trademark laws. However, if you wanted to use an image of Sparty, the university's mascot, that may be copyrightable subject matter. Because
you have a whole room of Spartans in here that perked up when you said that, by the way. Not me, though.
My particular favorite is the 1950s with the big chin with the stubble on it. I just like that one the best. I don't know why. Hey. So,
the Grizzly Sparty is a wonderful one for sure.
Yeah, reminds me of my childhood maybe. I don't know.
So let me ask you, can some things be protected by more than one type of intellectual property?
In a sense, yes. So, for example, software can conceptually be protected by a patent or a copyright, but each different instrument would protect a different aspect of the software. So because a patent is directed towards an invention or the technology, you know, for example, what the software is doing to the computer, the kind of data it's processing, et cetera, the patent would protect what the software does.
Okay, yeah, because the courts have thrown a big monkey wrench into patenting software recently, correct?
Oh, my goodness, yes, they have. It was June 2014 that the Supreme Court of the United States really muddied the waters what is patentable subject matter in the software field. And, you know, we are, as a collective community throughout the country, working through, our understanding of exactly how to properly protect software from a patent perspective. More and more each day we're figuring things out. But the issue is that the Supreme Court came up with this test, or rather affirmed a test from a previous case, without really delimiting the definitions of how to pass the test.
Mm. Gee, that was thoughtful. So you're still seeing software with, you know, copyright, whatever the year is, Microsoft or Apple or something like that, but you don't see it patented, huh? It's not protected by U.S. patent number.
Well, no, I don't wish to give you that impression at all. In fact, we are having great success with patenting software. Mm. It's just become much more difficult,
okay,
is all.
So what's the bar you have to jump over then?
there are several. The test that the Supreme Court has, trickled down to the USPTO and the many courts in the country is a two-step test, really. The first seeks to determine whether or not the heart of the software invention is, quote-unquote, abstract. For example, is it really just an algorithm or some kind of series of steps for doing something? If it is, the second part of the test asks whether or not there is significantly more than just the abstract quality that's expressed in the software. One thing that we have learned since that case was issued in 2014 is that software that solves a software-specific problem is afforded kind of more leniency. I know that's kind of a complex question to think about. What kind of software problem doesn't software solve? But it's really if there's an issue that arises in the computing environment that is unique to the computing environment, that's the kind of thing that we'd like to think about and focus on. But that's not to say that other types of software still can't be protected by patent law. We just may have to jump over other obstacles, as you say.
All right. So do you have to register each of these things, patents, trademarks, copyrights, in order to protect your IP, or can you do some, not all? I mean, or is it entirely a case-by-case basis?
Oh, that's a great question. And, it's a case-by-case basis based on the type of instrument. So by definition, trade secrets, which have to be kept strictly confidential, do not involve any registration process. Copyrights, from the moment that the artist creates the work, so as soon as I have finished my painting, for example, I automatically have rights in that artwork. But there are some caveats. For example, if I wanted to pursue a copyright infringement action against someone, I would have to register my copyright with the United States Copyright Office before I could take that legal action.
Hmm.
With trademarks, there are some limited rights available if you do not choose to register with the USPTO, but it is preferable when it's available to register with the USPTO in order to really have the full force of law behind your mark.
Let me follow up. What's the typical turnaround time for these various intellectual property things that you're doing here? Are we talking months, days, weeks? What are we talking?
That's something that everyone is interested in knowing. With trademarks, we typically see from the time that an application is filed until the mark becomes registered with the USPTO, it can be an average of 12 to 16, maybe 18 months.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, it's that long. With patents, however, it can be even twice as long. So on average, it could take 2 to 3 years from the time you file the paperwork.
Holy
You know, the USPTO is you know, working with a tremendous backlog of applications. You know, they have hundreds of thousands at the very minimum filed every year. And with their staff, you know, I imagine it's hard for them to, you know, thoroughly go through everything in a timely, efficient manner.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. My my employer, Lawrence Tech, bell
you
for
the shameless plug bell.
Yeah, the shameless plug bell. We hosted World IP Day last week, and I think I remember hearing that a little over a million patents are applied for each year. About 150,000 a year are granted. So there are some things that just don't get patented that are applied for. And that leads to my next question. When you see something, you frequently see the words patent pending. What does that mean? I mean, am I free to copy that, or what does that mean just to say that it's pending?
Sure, that's a great question also. Generally, patent pending means that a patent application has been filed with USPTO for the subject invention, and that if it is eventually issued, the would-be patent holder will have exclusive rights in the invention, that is, making, using, and selling the invention. Applicants who have an application pending before the USPTO often will use patent pending as a way to show the world, you know, customers, investors, that, hey, we are, in fact, you know, protecting or pursuing protection for our inventions, and be aware that, you know, once our patent application is issued, we will have retrospective rights from the day that we file the application.
We're kind of running low on time here. Let's get back into you shared a lot of great information. In fact, why don't you write me a guest column here so that we can, you know, people can print that out, because it's like a little manual here, right, for them. But talk a little bit about Young Bissell and how folks can reach you if they want to get more information. This is your turn to do your shameless plug here. So go ahead.
Well, thank you. I will shamelessly plug away. Young Bissell is a law firm headquartered in Troy, Michigan, that specializes in intellectual property. We do have offices here in Michigan, in Troy, and in Ann Arbor, also in Chicago, Philadelphia, and Silicon Valley. Our attorneys handle a full range of intellectual property legal services, from pursuing rights with the USPTO all the way to protecting client IP rights in federal courts. We represent many high-tech Silicon Valley companies that are really on the cutting edge of their industries. That includes software, automotive, electronics, and all sorts of other fields. I personally specialize in software patent prosecution, but I would be happy to speak with anyone who has questions about intellectual property, whether it's general or if they want to begin the process of protecting their company's IP. If you would like to contact us, please do so. You can visit Young Bissell online at youngbissell.com. That's YOUNGBASILE.com. Or you can also call me if you'd like to discuss by phone. My direct number is 248-244-0150.
Say that one more time. I know they're frantically writing that down. So
248-244-0150.
Got it. Okay, we're good. And this is Mike Brennan.
And this is Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast, and we're coming back with the most exciting Tom Kelly, COO of Automation Alley. So please stand by.
This is Matt Rausch.
Yeah, we were staring at each other for a second. And this is Mike Brennan.
Yeah, we need to go back to the hand signals. It's, you know, I spent a lot of years at WWJ, and I watched Roberta Giacina and Joe Donovan do that for years. They just pointed each other back and forth,
back and forth.
So that, yeah, that's why it sounded so seamless.
That's the secret. You know? Okay, yeah, sure got it. Is. All right, yep. Well, we're going to get that down. We're still babies at this. We're only into our 6th month.
Yes, but right now we're pointing at Tom Kelly, who's the COO of Automation Alley.
Oh, am I on?
Yes, yes. That's okay. We'll fix it in post. That's the second time I've said that today. So we're having a great show. But Tom Kelly is the COO of Automation Alley, and we'd like to talk to him about a variety of topics. First of all, give us your 30-second, the elevator pitch of what Automation Alley is for the 4 people on the entire planet who have not heard of it, okay?
Hey, listen, Automation Alley helps small and medium businesses build their tech or advanced manufacturing businesses, what they have, about 1,000 members strong. We cover 8 counties. That's Automation Alley. We're the voice of Southeast Michigan for advanced manufacturing.
Okay. And you're also an investor in Southeast Michigan. Tell us a little bit about this program. You're investing in startups these days through a program called 7Cs?
Exactly. So we've always been in the startup investment game. You know, Matt, when the tech industry kind of came to Michigan 10 years ago, because apparently it didn't exist before then.
No, it didn't exist.
When we really got serious and Michigan started to put some dollars behind this, you know, Automation Alley was on the forefront of that with some of the other smart zones. And we've invested over $9 million in startups over the last 10, 12 years. Lately, we've morphed and we've said, listen, Automation Alley has such a great tie-in to advanced manufacturing, to all the OEMs and tier ones and all these large companies that are doing really interesting things. Let's focus on technologies where we can actually take them by the hand and introduce them to some of these companies that are desperate for innovation. And so lately, we've focused all of our investments around our 7Cs program, which targets these advanced manufacturing startups. It's been really fun.
You need to explain what the 7Cs are besides, you know, Indian Ocean, Atlantic Ocean.
Well, you know, when we came out, by the way, thank you, Keith. You know, we just went through an 18-month process trademarking the 7Cs. So we know how painful that can be, and you need a good lawyer like Young and Basile to get that done. 7Cs really stands for the 7 levels that a company goes through. So they start with conception. They move on to the contextual aspect. That is, okay, I have this idea, but will it play in the market? Can I make money at it? Then we move on to clarity, which is, okay, I think based on what I know, I can start building this business on to customers, commercialization, yada, 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 right? That there's 7 Cs sort of through this process. And what we do is we don't use mentors. We use actual subject matter experts that get paid for a living to be experts in strategy or experts in sales or experts in market automation or experts in primary market research. And we pay those experts to walk alongside these startups to put the processes in place where as they scale, the company can scale with them. Very important to do that.
Can you point to success stories? What's coming out of the sausage machine on the other end? Which ones can you talk about?
Absolutely. So to give you an example, our first company in, we started this last January. So we're only in it about 16 months. By the way, we're only supposed to do 10 companies a year. We're at 19. And that's great to see because it's not all about software and medical devices and healthcare and life sciences. We're doing advanced manufacturing right here. We have 19. So to give you an example, the first one was Lighthouse Molding. They came to us. They have a way to protect electronic devices that make it dustproof, shatterproof, completely impervious to the elements. And they were able to triple sales in the last 14 months. So they've only been with us 14 months. We put them with these mentors, people like Sandler, people like BizNet, real professionals in the marketplace that get paid by bigger companies to teach them how to do this. We put them with the small companies. It's been great.
Okay. So that's an encapsulation type thing?
It is. It is. It's a molding, just like the name sounds. They've changed their name now to Lighthouse Electronic Protection.
Okay.
Because they said Lighthouse Over Molding was their name. And they said, well, nobody really understands unless you're a molder.
Sounds like a plastics company.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they They jazzed it up a little bit.
So you help mold companies.
Can I use that?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that free?
Yeah, that's I'll give you that one.
Right.
Let's talk about your – I have a news release on my hot little hands here from the Technical Talent Development Program where you train – 13, I can do it.
That's a tongue twister.
1,347 people.
I remember when that was kicked off at a big old wasn't it a former GM building or something like that in Pontiac? Or
It was. And this was I think 5 years ago.
Yeah,
now. I was still working for the state of Michigan when they kicked off the program. But you know, we were tasked with training about 715 employees through IT, and that they could have been employed already or they could be not employed. But what the program did was it allowed people that didn't maybe have an IT background to get trained up in the skills that were in demand by employers. And we focused on veterans. We focused on the chronically unemployed. And you saw the results, 1,347. We were tasked with doing 715. It was a wildly successful program. Hmm. Really, really useful.
Yeah,
now, the funding for that comes from where?
The funding came from the Department of Labor. So this was a federal contract. Federal always sounds very formal and dangerous, but they were great to work with, and we really trained a lot of people.
Now, do you have any programs for like all these people that are in the factory work, manufacturing? A lot of them lost their jobs. They have a high school degree. That's all they've ever known is how to work at a factory. Do you have something for them?
Absolutely. You know, we have both classroom-led and online training with partners like Autodesk and PTC and Siemens and Tata and all the names that you would know about. And they have these certification programs. And the biggest one that we work with is SME and Tooling U.
Okay.
So when you think about Tooling U, I think there's 1,300 or so online courses through that program.
Wow.
And if you're a member of Automation Alley, you get a discount. But if you're just an individual, you can also come in and get certified, and we can help you navigate through right to all those training courses, quite a bit of them.
Okay. So you work with people and help them identify what training courses would help them the most in a job search, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Well, you know, if you're in a job search, you come to Automation Alley and go through our talent search. It's on our website, and it creates a match between you and what employers are looking for. And it doesn't just give you a list of jobs that are posted. You fill out criteria of things you're good at, things you like to do, and it matches you with jobs that are out there.
And if you're missing something, you can help them with that too.
You bet.
All right.
You bet.
And you also do recruitment because you've got a Chinese plastics manufacturer coming to Canton, and I'm not going to try to pronounce the name.
Qingfa.
Thank you.
That's the name, Qingfa. You know, our business attraction is in partnership with the MEDC, and it's really focused on those large companies that are around the world that maybe have not thought of Southeast Michigan as a place to do business. So we have a soft landing center up in Troy, and they can come to our center, and we'll put them up for 120 days, and we will make introductions to the various Tier 1 and OEM partners in Southeast Michigan, and we help them find contracts. Mm. And Qingfa came here. They stayed with us for about 5 or 6 months.
Couldn't get rid of them, huh?
Well, no. You know what the beauty is? We couldn't get rid of them because they were building their space out in Canton. So we let them stay, and now they've gone over to Canton. They're going to add about 100 people in 12 months.
Wow.
What a great story.
Yeah.
A billion-dollar company in China, and somebody asked me if I can just take a moment, man. They said, why would a Chinese company come to Southeast Michigan? All the business is over there. And he said, no, not really. All the innovation's occurring here. They have to be where their customer is. If they want to get the million widgets, they got to build the first one.
Right. And by the way, folks, did you hear where this is located? Canton Township. That would be Wayne County, not Oakland County.
That's right. We cover 8 counties, and I'll tell you, we fight that battle.
It started out as Oakland County. Some people still think it is primarily. But you're all over the place.
Maybe the majority.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me on to say we focus on 8 counties.
Yeah, right.
Even Washtenaw, right? Ann Arbor.
Yes, absolutely. And Spark is a great partner, and we love working with them. You bet.
So, yeah, and that goes out as far as Macomb and Livingston and, you know, all sorts of places.
Yeah, right? And up to
so.
Genesee.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, up to Genesee.
Now, speaking of craft beer, I see you have a trade mission coming to Germany. So is that going to be a real drunken affair? Or what's going to come out of that?
I wanted to get on that mission. They wouldn't let me go. It's
bring,
the
Hanover. Yeah, bring your Stein. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Right. They left Saturday, actually. The show is running right now.
Yep.
And, you know, the president of the United States was there.
Mm.
This is because this is the first year in the history of Hanover that the U.S. is the partner country. Now, what happens when you're the partner country is they do a lot of focus on your companies, your technologies, everything's they roll out the red carpet for the partner country.
Mm.
And so we took 8 of our members with us over to Germany, and the governor is going to be there this week. It really is a great, great trip.
Okay. Who are you know the names of the companies or
I don't. It's a well kept secret.
Okay, I won't skip that one. Because their wives don't. Their wives don't know.
You should.
Where'd they go?
I have learned now that I'm doing PR. I've learned the PR guy's answer to that. It's like I you know how many PR guys does it take to screw in a light bulb? I don't know, but I'll get right back to you.
Yeah, that's right. I gotta find that out for you.
Okay.
You know, in my talking points, the PR people did not give me those. Right.
Oh, okay.
We just got a few minutes left. Let's get back to Automation Alley, how big you are. Last I knew, you were over 1,000 members.
We're about 1,000 members, yep. Right. And
and you got like a who's who of some of the really big ones, right?
So. Well, of course. Yeah, General Motors has been a great supporter of us and others. And you know, the list, I don't want to call them all out because I know I'll forget all the ones I didn't call out.
Yeah,
I'll get in trouble with that. But, you know.
But yes, it's automotive, but yes, it's also beyond automotive, right?
So yeah, that's, right. Yeah, yeah. Right. So we focus on mobility, but we also focus on advanced manufacturing and anything to do with automation. You know, the world's coming back to us. Mm-hmm. Automation got... You know, it started and then it kind of got like a little stale, and now it's coming right back to us with the Internet of Things and the industrial Internet of Things. It's great.
Yeah,
a lot of energy coming around that.
Yep.
Well, Michigan is kind of going back to its roots. I mean, when we went through the big corporate phase, which is not what we were. I mean, we were a bunch of machine shops. That's why Henry Ford was here. That's why he had all those innovative companies 100 years ago.
Right.
Now they're coming back.
Well, there was a couple of big waves of consolidation among auto suppliers, but now it's like they're encouraging entrepreneurship where people are encouraged to, you know, work, you know, on really innovative sort of skunk works type stuff within a larger company. So.
You got it.
All right, so if they want to learn more about Automation Alley, it's time for you to do your shameless plug. Tom Kelly, COO.
There's my ding. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, come to AutomationAlley.com, and we have services around talent. We have services around entrepreneurship. We have international business services, both export and trade missions we just talked about. And we have business attraction. If you're a larger company looking for help getting contracts over this way, we help defense companies. All kinds of networking opportunities. Got to come see us. AutomationAlley.com. How's that? Did I do okay?
And you did. And Ken Rogers, I know you're listening, and he's not drinking beer in the studio. So.
Well, we can't vouch for him from this point forward.
No,
but he has not had anything.
He has not had
to this point.
The last time I was on, he talked to me about that. It won't happen again.
Okay.
Well, it isn't 5 o'clock Eastern time yet.
He's still on the clock.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we have to move to the – not unfortunately, but we're done with Tom.
Yes.
Now we have to go to darn old John there, Lilienthal. No, actually, he's a new company we're working with, business development manager at KLM Computer Services. He'll be right back after we're back.
And we'll be right back. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast. Stick around. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to segment 4 of episode 32 of the M Squared TechCast. How's that for precise?
It's way too much math for me.
But, okay.
Anyway, we have on the show. He's been waiting patiently, but we wanted to get him exposed to the madness that goes on here. We have John Lilienthal, the business development manager. And I'm going to get this right. KLM.
KML.
Jeez, I wrote it down wrong. Dang it. KML. I keep confusing him with the Dutch Airlines. He doesn't speak Dutch, I don't think, though, do you?
Nope, not at all.
KML. Dang it.
But if he clears his throat, he's a little Flemish. Oh,
yes.
Sorry.
Ding. Okay. Well, tell us about KML. See, I got it right this time.
All right. KML was founded in 2004 by two partners, and they got away from another company they were part of because they wanted to provide a more focused service to their customers.
Yeah, they wanted to do it their way. You see that a lot.
Pretty much. Yeah, that was it. And they didn't like what they were doing at the time, so they moved on. And started with those two, and we're now up to about 12 employees. And we're headquartered in Northville, Michigan, also have an office in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and we also do business in Southern Florida, Texas, Boston, and Northern California.
All fun places to visit, I
might
add.
I know.
So he's on the road a lot visiting all the offices, but KML, that I was asking you off air, I'd never asked that question, what that stands for, and you said?
KML, Chip, one of the partners, Chip, his daughters are all named with a K, with a middle initial M or L, and his last name, or
you can do it.
KML, like Carrie, Krista, et cetera.
Got it.
It's just initials of his daughter. So
okay.
Why not, right?
Why not? Yeah, well,
you got to call it something.
Beauty you might as well of starting make it. Your own company. You can call it whatever you want to call it, right? So what you guys are into is it's the new buzzword now is infrastructure as a service, managed services. It's called all sorts of things. But what is it exactly is it for the uninitiated out there?
Well, managed services is simply a way to take care of all your computers, servers, networks, printers, everything in your office to keep them working so that you can make money. And the whole idea is to take the burden off of the business owner of taking care of all this technology and making sure that that it keeps running, that it doesn't slow people down, that it doesn't stop them from doing work.
So you sort of become their IT department then?
We become their IT department.
So what are the benefits of that to a small business? What are the benefits of managed services?
Most of the time, first of all, there's a single pay. I mean, a monthly charge, you just pay that, and then we take care of everything. Mm-hmm. You have a question, you call us. You have a problem, you can call us, email us, whatever, and somebody will show up and fix the problem, or we'll fix it remotely for you.
But not you personally. You won't go out there and fix it personally.
You wouldn't want me to fix anything.
Okay, got it. And I know from talking to the bosses, the partners, because I was in a conference call with them a few weeks back, that you're doing quite well with that.
Yeah, it has since 2008, when things were not so good around here, to now, we've grown quite expansively. This is where we've added technicians and people up here, people down in South Carolina. When I say up here, I mean Northville area.
Yeah.
It's been growing, and we're getting to the point where we need some more people because we got people calling us and saying,
Matt loves that question.
Yeah,
that's my
favorite question. That's a question I always asked when I was doing the IT report, because I started the IT report during a recession. There was another nasty recession during my tenure running the IT report.
Yeah, I remember that one.
So people always want to know, are you hiring, and if so, for what skill sets? So
we are not actively hiring yet, but we are looking at that. But we're looking for people who are trainable.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking for people who are smart enough to figure it out. They don't necessarily have to have all of the skills of taking care of servers and everything. We'll teach them that. But if they have that, it's even better. We can start there. But mostly we're looking for people who are teachable and are willing to work because that's how we do it.
Matt represents an institution that has lots of those people. Perhaps we can hook him up with, I'm going to get it right this time, KML.
So yes, LTU.
That might be a really good source. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So tell me about shopping for a company to do managed services for you. What should you be aware of when you're in the market for this stuff?
That there are a lot of them out there, and some of them are good and some of them aren't so good. Our competition ranges from the single person who's got his car, and we call them trunk slammers because when they leave, they slam their trunk shut. And that's a one-person type of company. You might be able to get a hold of them. They might be back next week, whatever. I think the thing you really want to look for is a company that's organized, that has procedures in place, that has a way for you, a common way for you to contact you. They might have a what we call a service level agreement saying.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Yep. So we'll be, if it's this kind of problem, we'll be there right now. For example, last week we had a bunch of down servers because of some power outages and things like that. And technicians that were on a job over here that was routine were dropped everything and went to that customer to get them up and running and then went back to the routine stuff. So we make sure that the technology is not only working for the customer, but making sure that your service is prioritized by need and not by our schedule or where somebody happens to be.
And I know you've got a couple levels of service because we talked about that as kind of you've got an all-you-could-eat kind of feature, and then you have one that's a bit scaled back. Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, the difference between what we call premium and basic is basically premium is 24/7. The other one is 8x5. So, but it doesn't – the difference in the services provided are the same. And the thing that we like to do is – we charge you a monthly fee, and you pay that monthly fee, and you get your service. There's no extras. If you call us up, if you're on the premium, you call us up at Saturday afternoon. We will respond if that's necessary, and it won't be an extra charge just because it's Saturday afternoon.
Which it always is, by the way. It's like a furnace breaking or something.
It's Sunday morning, right?
Yeah, it's always morning. It's the middle of the night on the weekend of the coldest day of the year. Yeah,
yes, exactly right. Yeah, right. But there are no extras. There's no add-ons. It's just a flat monthly fee that you pay, and you get everything.
And I think that's your most popular because I looked at your client list. I can't disclose it because I signed a non-disclosure. But I looked at your client list, and that seems to be what really hot one for you, right?
That's the one that attracts the most business because nobody really wants to worry about it at all. It's sort of like having a life insurance policy that's good 4 days a year. Which four should it be?
The one you die on. Right?
Yeah,
you
never, exactly. You never know when you're going to step in front of that bus, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. So what do you think? I mean, everybody says they're unique. Everybody says they're different. What do you think really makes you unique, the KML?
One of the things is that we will do whatever it takes to make it right for the customer. We will go that extra mile. But the big thing is that we've got procedures in place. So when somebody comes, so you have a technician that comes to your location, say every week. One of the things that we do is make sure that we've got weekly, biweekly, monthly visits to every single customer, so that we can get to know the customer. They can get to know us. But if that customer has a problem, and your technician that normally visits you is on vacation, well, the technician that will come and fix your problem already knows what they've done. They've got an automated system in the background that says, when he was here last time, he did this, and now it's still breaking. Now let's take a look at it again. Mm-hmm. So it's processes and automation and all those kinds of things that make us work as a team and not just as a single individual.
Now, I know we can't talk about specific customers, but I did look at areas, and you were into three or four different areas pretty heavily. One was healthcare, if I recall. Another was manufacturing. What were the other two?
Well, manufacturing is a big one for us. We do deal with a lot of healthcare. We don't really have any kind of verticals. It's people that have automation and need it. It can be accountants. It could be whatever. But the need for automation in certain industries is higher in some than others. So we don't do a lot of retail because they got a cash register and maybe a computer. But we do a couple. So it's not that it's not, but there are multiple offices rather than just one store.
Yeah, and it was a really long list. It was went on for like 3 pages when I looked at it. So congratulations. That's great.
Thank you.
You want to have multiple customers because bad things happen when you only have a few, right?
So that's right. Well, yeah, and we like to have customers that we can help grow. And that's a couple of them. We started with maybe 30 or 40 people, and now we've got 80 or 90. And that's always nice.
We've only got a couple minutes left here, so I just wanted to ask, besides managed services, what are the services you offer?
Well, we do two other things. One is structured cabling. In other words, the low-voltage cabling, the mm-hmm. Cat5 cables throughout the building. And the other one is we do provide a couple of telephone services, telephone systems, so we can install them, take care of them, make sure they work for you.
Well, telephone is all IP these days anyway, right?
That's so right. Okay. That's right. Yep.
Yeah, the other IP, Internet Protocol, not intellectual
yeah,
property.
Yeah, I don't have a regular landline. I have a VoIP connection.
Right, so. And even large companies, large manufacturing companies have IP-type systems now.
Yeah.
So.
What's the – I mean, can you think of a problem – what's the craziest problem you ever dealt with? Could you think of something like that or the most fun one you can think of or the weirdest?
The weirdest ones that we run into most of the time is we have a couple of customers that are – either headquartered or have people overseas. And this VPN doesn't work, so you have to talk to the people in Europe to say, this is the problem. Can you help us? Can we work together?
The time zones and all that.
Yeah, the time zones. You know.
Language barriers, yeah. Right.
Yeah, actually, language barriers is not bad. We speak terrible, say, German, but they speak really good English.
So. Yeah, English really is the language of business around the world. Even flight controllers, all the aircraft are all English.
Yeah,
you know,
right. That's
so,
true.
Right. Yep. So, yeah, just coordinating with multiple people in different countries and time zones, that's probably the craziest thing we do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's before we wrap here, we're coming to the end, and I'm going to get this right. KML Computer Services. You're not the Dutch airline. So, I grew up in Grand Rapids, so Dutch. I think Dutch, you know. So, but so
Vanden Vander Vanden. Over
yeah.
Here.
So, morning to morning.
Yeah.
So, anyway, tell us if they want more information. What's your website? Can they contact you directly?
They can contact me directly. My phone number is 248-773-3011. If you do that same phone number 248-773-3000, you'll get the main number. Our website is KMLCS for computer services.com. And my email is john@kmlcs.com.
All right. Give us that phone number one more time.
248-773-3011.
Okay. And the reason I say that is if someone's computers aren't working and they really need you, they can't find you on the web. So there you go.
That's right. Exactly right.
All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap. Gosh, this is the fastest darn hour. I mean, just a zip and we're done, you know, and try to keep it. Jessica entertained there. She's laughing all the way through the show. She just keeps her mic
down. I'm not sure why she's laughing.
Yeah, the hand signals we're giving her, you know.
I don't
that's
think
exactly
she's,
it.
I don't
that's
think
it.
She's laughing yes. with us. I don't know.
No. Yes, I am.
Okay, all right.
Probably add us, I think. Anyway, so we have to stop the madness for today. We want to thank our guest, John Lilienthal, the Business Development Manager at KLM. I got it right. I know Michelle's listening and she'll yell at
no,
me.
No, you said KLM.
Did I do it again?
Yeah. It's KML.
KML.
Okay.
All right. KML.
That's all right. I'm disclosing state secrets here, so I have nothing to brag about.
We want to thank Michelle Grinnell from Pure Michigan, Tom Kelly from Automation Alley, John Schoenberger from Young Basil, and we're done for the day. This is Mike Brennan.
And this is Matt Rausch, and you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast. Join us again next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and all the time at podcastdetroit.com.
See you next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
This is a previously recorded episode.